You don't talk to him anymore?
No.
Did you have a falling out with him over Ion?
Or? No, absolutely not. No. My father could discuss things of that nature, no problem, but it'd be always theoretical. He's a teacher. He must die. You know? Like, seriously, like, I really got issues with that. I really don't. Like, I love knowledge. I love textbooks. I love dictionaries. It's just, but I really hate teachers.
Yeah.
Always have. But there's always good ones. There's always special ones, and it's because they, you know, they're coming at it from a different place. So. Yeah.
Is he retired?
Oh yeah, he's retired. Yeah, long, long time ago.
Yeah, you. I don't think you had heard of McLuhan, but you were surprised your father knew McLuhan as an academic. He knew of McLuhan.
Oh, he knew of the McLuhan Joycean kind of Wyndham Lewis, the whole, he looks like, oh, ooh, wow, that's, I remember him kind of making like a facial expression of, oh, you're going to go there, are you?
Was he an English prof, a professor of English literature?
Yeah, like an associate professor at SFU. And the worst part, not so much literature, that was kind of the more fun stuff they used to do as far as textbooks in Victoria, but what was your question, actually? I just kind of got lost.
Was he an English professor of literature?
No, he's like an associate professor at Simon Fraser University.
And he teaches English?
No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't teach anymore. He retired like a decade and a half ago. My parents are old. I supposedly am old, but I got ID'd at a sushi joint like a week ago sitting with a 24-year-old, and he didn't get ID'd, he didn't get ID'd, but I got ID'd, and he's 24, and I've been around for a while.
Yeah, so your father, what did he teach?
Like honors literature, and then education, that was a deal. So he was an educator of educators. He is that's the nastiest of the nasty. Because he's smart enough to know exactly what the fuck he was doing, and I called him out on it. And he said it, yeah, we've been weaning critical thinking out for a long time, and he knew that. And I was like, so you did what you did, and you knew what you were doing. It's just like, it means you're a creep, as far as I'm concerned, but I don't know, I don't believe in bad or good anymore. I guess he has a way of looking at the world, and I have a different way of looking at the world. Simple as that.
Yeah, so, but his second level was a teacher of English.
His first level was he bobbled back and forth. He bobbled between Victoria, Simon Fraser University, and just a high school in Maple Ridge here in British Columbia.
In where, British Columbia?
Maple Ridge, British Columbia.
Right. So yeah, so he knew of Joyce and Lewis and that because he knew modern literature.
Oh, he was obsessed with literature. Obsessed.
Did he have a modern author, a modern favorite?
I think Keats or Yeats, and of course, obviously, he wasn't someone that I really could get close to, like, that way. Like, he really was pretty, he was in his books. That was his time. He just kind of didn't really go there.
Right, but I mean a modern, like Margaret Atwood or somebody. What, did he have any favorite today people?
That's not something him and I would discuss. But yeah, he's constantly reading. I know that. So what he delves into now, he's one of those people where he'll like basically box up a library, and it's like 2 years later he's got a box. There's just books just flow freely and easily to him. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Period. You know, you're probably like that too. It's just like they just do. It doesn't matter. He can, you know what I mean? People could just take books away every month, and there'd still always be books just flowing in. It's the same with me. Books kind of come around me.
Okay, what TV do you like now? What's new?
Wow. I watch so much. let's see. I've been staying on top of Believe. That's interesting. I'm embarrassed to say that The Good Wife has had me from the beginning. I think that's actually a really great, like a really well done show.
Right, you know that the guy who made it jumped off, you know, committed suicide is the story, while preparing a movie called Ion.
Yes, I've heard you talk about that, and that's the Ridley Scott's brother, right?
Yeah, Tony Scott.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Wife is a good show for showing you what's going on in law today, you know, with all the technologies and conflict of interest. It's impossible to preserve legal values anymore.
And the overlay with you as well, right? Like with the character from Fringe that slips in there, and now that Watcher has slipped in, which I noticed as well.
Do you see anything in Julie or that character Alicia as reflecting Carolyn in any way?
That's a difficult question. At times, sure.
I would say that's Carolyn 25 years ago, in the 80s, being a doctor and beginning to be. To see the corruption in medicine, you know. But
yeah, I can see that
going through.
What she's doing—that's that's quite. It's quite the little dance, as far as dealing with the kind of people that she's dealing with on that radio on her show, and just like that kind of an interaction. It's something new, like she has to use like a whole new lexicon kind of and just kind of don't freak people out but kind of tell them at the same time, so she's kind of playing like kind of the sub non-shrink, but you know, but she does it with ease and she seems pretty relaxed about it. You can just see she just kind of breathes and just kind of just, you know, everything's kind of just gonna be okay, and she just kind of rolls through it. And
but yeah, it is a new It's a new presentation of a doctor in action.
Yeah.
It is.
It's a new model. Classifying it, I'd say you want to be the one to classify it. That's for sure. You don't want anyone else to tell you who you are. So.
Okay, so she classifies it? Is that what you're saying?
You want to, when you're going to come up with something so new and something's like such, we're so groundbreaking, you want to name the game, you know?
Yeah. So you see her doing that?
Yes, I do. At some point, but she'll have to. Maybe it could be effortless. It could just happen by,
right.
What may seem by accident, but
yeah,
whatever.
You made that post a couple weeks ago that you noticed the confidence in her voice. I mean, for you, she's one of the most ascended people that you don't know, but you're hearing. You're saying, that's what an ascended person acts like. That's what you're noticing.
Oh, yeah. And also, I have to say, the RNA drops kind of allow certain skills of observation, they're heightened beyond. It's like, you know, when a person's talking, it's like you can almost see their facial expressions, their movements, or just because of the actual resonance of everything that's bouncing around in their room. It's like it transmits it comes through if you know how to allow it.
Yeah.
Right. So. Yeah, it's miraculous just to watch her develop this. It's kind of on the fly, develop this new kind of lexicon nomenclature. Yeah, something new.
Yeah. And what else going on? So, do you listen to Ginny's show?
I've heard one. I haven't heard many, but I think I have heard one or two.
Have you heard a lot of Carolyn's shows?
Yes, I've heard a number of her shows.
So you listen to Payday the most?
Yes.
Hmm.
Yeah, I do. Because that's where I listen to Ion. Hear what he's got to say. And like I was saying, the new INS, they do have some really, really good They allow him to go off in some interesting directions.
Yeah. They still should speak a little more.
Yeah.
Like,
sure,
they,
I guess.
A bit more.
But it's the stun reaction, right? You kind of get lost because you don't know necessarily just how relevant whatever he's saying necessarily kind of hits them, and then there's the other levels of which he's hitting, because there's a force being dealt with, right, that's being transmitted through there, you know, the computers and the TVs, you know what I mean, that's that unseen power being like just, you know, rifled through people's realms.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, Sheila wrote, after Sheila talked to Ion, she had a message. See what it is. Now, Pamela just keeps typing, hundreds of messages from Typa, from Pamela. I don't know, I can't ask Ion all that stuff. Come in here, do it herself. Let's see, where is Sheila's message? Just a second. Sheila. Many hours ago, she says, Bob, that was great. Can you please ask Ion, as I'll be asleep, to describe the process that is the rinsing aspect of lather, rinse, repeat? Thank you. So, I didn't get a chance to ask that. Gene says, good morning, Bob. Making coffee. I laid down for an hour before the show and awoke 12 and a half hours later. It's been a dilly of a week. MJ is great. Keep him going.
Ah, that's sweet.
Yeah, MJ. So what about all these wonderful updates we've been hearing about?
I didn't really say that they're wonderful updates, but I guess for me, they might, I don't know, might be. As far as, I don't know, just being on the mix of, I guess, Realign, drops, different amounts of drops, it unleashed like a chain reaction of all sorts of events that linked up with Bob, people that had been actually interested in Bob when they're like, that hadn't heard his name or anything like since they were like 20 years old, they said, and they were in like 38, 39 years old at that point, to just xenophrony is just everywhere. And, also too, is one of the things I do is that I just take drops in front of people, and I don't say anything. I just don't even talk about it. I just take them in front of people, and then they inquire, and then I'll just like give them a drop, and I'll just be like, yeah, super sugar, it's good stuff. And then they find them, and then I wait for them to ask for it again. And they don't know why. I'm just like kind of field testing them. And they just keep on coming back, and it's like, yeah, each time they come back, they'll ask, oh, do you have those drops? And they don't know, they have no idea what they are. They just want them. It's awesome, some of the games I've played with that. It's, and yeah, like literally, and Ion talked about it. He talked about what was going to happen, like in all the audios. Like he said it, like, I mean, like crazy stuff where, like literally, like just, where, you know, like where people just like basically just want to stick their tongue down your ear, like, and they don't know why. Literally, they're walking down the street, and some girl just hails you down and just says, "Oh, you look real happy." And it's just like, "Well, let me buy you a drink. Come upstairs." It's like, well, okay, yeah. You know, like seriously, it's just out of control,
Right.
And then there's the Hollywood thing. I was like, being in Vancouver, like you have to understand that. And I just actually heard some of my spies in Hollywood just told me that that it's actually getting over the top, just a little bit too LA. It's a little bit too LA up here for their liking. And they've been, there's somebody that I know that's been involved in just media. She does mostly, actually more international commercials. That's her main niche market. But now that there's so much being filmed here, they had to unionize the background. So basically, any kind of working actor up here now has a full time job, acting on everything. So they get paid pretty well just to be a person in the background. And then also they get the proximity of being around just the sets to pick up these other roles, because these people are really, really well trained, you know, people that went to school for theater arts and stuff like that.
Right.
Dramatic arts or whatever. So, Hollywood is just like all around me. And like, I know like different little sectors that all don't know each other, and they're all involved with Hollywood. Like, I know guys at work just that do the lighting for IATSE, and I know the production assist, like a little crew, these kids from Ottawa, really, really polite group of kids that, work, as a PA assistant. And I've been watching this one guy, he just kind of really just go up through the ranks. And so he got on some real big budget stuff that I really can't talk about, because I don't know, it gets weird. I don't want anyone to get fired or anything like that, like seriously, straight up. But there's some pretty heavy hitters like in town. Like, even see, Ben Stiller was in town a couple of weeks ago. I heard people talking about him actually staying here and not going back to LA. And there's just so much. Like, even with Fringe, it's like the whole time the whole Fringe deal was going on, it's just the girl that used to stand in for Astrid for lighting lived upstairs. I've known her for a year, I've known her for like a decade. Another friend of mine, Kurt, that lives like a couple of blocks away, he was in an episode of a Fringe where he was like the husband, and then I guess someone was looking for somebody and they thought it was him, but it actually happened to be his wife. But ends up getting killed off in that. And he just got did a role on Supernatural, and Ion actually was the one that put me onto it. It was weird. It's like, Ion mentioned it before, and then he came over a couple of days later, and then he said, yeah, no, actually, and he never tells me about his work, too. He gets to work on lots of stuff. Like, he's been like an Alien versus Predator. He's got a pretty good, I don't know, whatever you call it, portfolio, or what do you call it, what an actor has?
Resume.
Resume. Sure. As far as, like, things that he's done. So, it's just, surprised that he then all of a sudden then came to me and said, oh yeah, I just picked up this Supernatural that I actually think is pretty good. Some work that I did. And he goes, and I think I may even end up back in there. And, Ian had just mentioned it kind of before. It's kind of strangely mentioned a particular episode of Supernatural, which I've never watched, but a friend of mine from IATSE's was doing the lighting on for the first like four seasons. It's one of those weird shows that you never thought would have lasted, but I guess the budget allowed it just to go on forever. But, it's just kind of all around you in Vancouver, because it's such a tiny town. You got to remember that, you have Southern California, which has got more, like, probably, most of the people in California. So that means there's more people there than there is in all of Canada. And then you got a little town like Vancouver to have so many pilots and so many movies. You know, like, they've been filming the fourth and fifth, night at the museum with, Ricky Gervais and, Ben Stiller and, Owen Wilson and a whole slew of other kind of, I guess, what do you call it, when stars just kind of pop in? They just got like just a deluge of, just cameo after cameo or whatever. I suppose that's the whole deal. It's Cameo City. So, and that's all going on in the studios out in Burnaby, and has been for months and months and months.
Did you ever notice, James Kidney on Canadian TV?
No, I did not. I never really watched much Canadian television, to be quite honest with you.
Mm. He's the guy who was the leader of the Watchers at the end of Fringe.
I know who he is. You had him on your show, and I didn't really know about him. He wasn't really on my radar at all, as far as I remember. Clemenger up here. Yeah. You see all sorts of people. Like, I remember, like, last summer, I was, like, walking along, and, like, the guy that got the Oscar for that Django Unchained, he's the German kind of sales guy that just saves the Jamie Foxx character or something in Django Unchained, and he ended up, I think, winning an Oscar, or he was... I don't know, he did something. He got some sort of acclaim from that movie, which was whatever it was. Him and his family were just kind of like just walking down the street, just, you know, one evening, just a couple blocks away. I was kind of surprised. Just, he seemed like a little bit of a high level actress just to be out, or actor to be out there with his family so casually after the volume of people that I knew had been there not too long before. I think it's something about the Canadian kind of, you know, I guess the Canadian sensibility of just, we're more embarrassed. Like, I can even remember being, like, even young and in our 20s and, like, Mark Wahlberg or something coming into like, a club and us kind of actually shunning him because he just kind of seemed like he was making too much of a kerfuffle when he, like, you know, that's, you know how to enter a place and really not be don't notice if you don't want to be noticed kind of thing. So, you know, I remember us just kind of being kind of put off by Hollywood people, to be honest with you. It just kind of caused problems or noticed. Right. I don't know. You know, it's just kind of, yeah, it's just an issue that just isn't necessary kind of thing. But it's different now, though. Kids in their early 20s and that are being bombarded with even more and more stars. And it's, Vancouver's turning into a new little money haven. And I guess after Trump gets his towers in here, I guess that's the green light for a lot of other money to start flowing this way.
Okay, well, that's very good. I want to start playing this recording. The show's not going to go to 8, 9, 10. I got to do something at noon hour.
Yeah,
so,
go to the beach.
What?
Yeah, go to the beach or go to the beach tomorrow. Whoa.
No, I won't be going to the beach. I've got to do something else. But the so I'm going to play this session, Melting Titanium number 35. See how much we can play. December 8, 2009. So thank you for your talk. Maybe in an hour or two, if you're still around, we could do it. Continue, or other people come on. They might want to say something to you. So that was pretty good. Let's see. Matthew Rose and who is B? B 847. Who was that person? That's not Croatia, man. Evanston, Illinois. You want to say who you are? You're speaking. We're not hearing, though. Okay, so I'm going to mute you guys, and we're going to hear Ion.
All participants are now muted.
Early interaction. This is a year before RNA drops. And where is that sound? Where's sound at? Okay. So, here we go. December 8th, 2009.
But everybody that's joining us, welcome. Just relax. Be easy about all this. This is an ESP exercise, which means that you're building through contrast your efficiency of activating a gift. And how you do it, just for those that don't know, as I'm sure Bob, he archives the archives of the archives, so we might as well get an archival record. Here's what you do. You focus in your mind, in your picture, like, for example, if you had on a radio or a pea pod or a chip box or a TV box or something, and you see the mouths moving but you can't quite hear, and then you kind of really focus on hearing so you can understand, so it's kind of low, and sometimes it's the case when it's booming very, very loud, so much so that the audio kind of makes it difficult to get the actual clairvoyant words that are being emitted that your speaker is picking up on. Well, that's sort of what you can do here. It makes it very simple and easy to just sort of focus on these things that you think you're hearing. And you're not sure if you understand, but that's is it clears out the white noise in your mind with your divided attention. And what you'll find is that you'll start getting thoughts. They'll start to sort of, they're just there, and you don't know where they came from. Maybe it's something in your remembrance. Maybe it's something just hot off the press. Maybe it's you forgot to pay your cable bill, or something will come into your mind. Well, those just ambient thoughts then all of a sudden set the score of what you're listening to. And once the score of what you're listening to is sort of balanced with the focused attention of activating a gift within your ESP, extrasensory perception, then it gets easier and easier and easier. And then you'll start knowing and having a topic. Many engage our show, and they're practicing this process. They're learning it. They're smoothing off the rough edges, and they think about things. And then they'll get the archives to listen to them to see if their topical response got through or not, depending on which way our hostess is running the show at this particular moment. And then it gets to be fun because it starts syncing up. They start thinking about pickled herring. Well, who thinks of pickled herring and why? And then they start thinking of Mooshu Moose. Well, who in the world has ever thought one time ever of Mooshu, like the Chinese dish of Mooshu pork or Mooshu shrimp, but a Mooshu Moose? And then you think, then you hear it and you go, I was thinking about that. And we're like, yes, that's exactly how this thing works. Then you're syncing up the perceptions. And that's what makes this a delicious, fun exercise that allows an interaction, and it activates the gifts, which is what we're always about. It also lets you more easily recognize that you indeed have a non-physical. That's whether you like it or not, whether you want it or not, and then you can push against it, please yourself, you marvelous creator. It still doesn't negate the non-physical. And that activation then all of a sudden starts giving you an extra set of hands, an extra player, an orchestration. You have an in with the umpire. pick your descriptive adjectives there because they're your very own. Then what happens is you can very succinctly start knowing that you have this. And that knowing is the secret that we're trying to get you to the place of activating all day, every day, in your process of becoming what you call an enlightened capital man, or maybe that's what Thoth thought about it.
Excellent. We've finished the intro.
That's, yes.
The how-to is very good. We haven't had that before. Okay. Took 35 sessions to get to it. That's great. Okay. We, number one, don't know who number one is participated in the show last week. And, I asked Ion what images did he get from, number one when he and his friend were sending them. And, Ion picked up that it was marshmallows and mackerel fish. And so I told him that. He wrote back, this is number one. I don't remember sending those two images, but we did send marmoleum.
Well, that if you mix those together, you'd be very close to that, wouldn't you?
That's right. And it actually says it's a natural flooring product.
Uh-huh.
I don't know it. And then he says, I suppose marmoleum does sound similar to marshmallow.
And mackerel.
Yeah, marmoleum could be a fish. Could be a fish, marmoleum.
Special. Well, if you notice right after that, we were saying holy mackerel.
Oh, what, you mean...
Holy moly.
Yeah, holy moly.
Oh, that's the holy
mackerel.
Marmoleum. So actually, you've got it all in there.
See how fun, because it's fun. That's the trickery, and it's not a trick. But it's a trick if you've never done it before and don't have the resonance, because you humans are always looking for this impeditable, empirical, insufferable evidentiary example that you use to gauge the distance between you interviewing you of how you are doing. When if you can just be easy with the whole process and let it flow, then in like this experience, it just becomes fun. And fun is what it's all about. Humans get all tangled up. They get caught up in their past, their present, their future, and their future's anticipation that they can't get where they want to go. And then their past is their fear that it's going to come out the way it came out before. And then their now gets all crossed up with how their now is working out in collation with their past experience for their future wantings. They have a desire, and before they even give it a chance to show up, they've left that desire, crossed it off the list, and moved on to something else, so much so that they've got the queue so full of their order, the UPS truck can't get it to them fast enough. Before it ever gets to their door, they've sent the cancel notice to take it back. Mm-hmm. Well, the trucks are rolling day and night trying to get you what you're asking for. And you don't get mad at the UPS man for delivering it. That'd be a good example of non-physical. When FedEx comes, it's not personal. They're just delivering the parcel, you see. So it's that connection that kind of comes through, just like this gift. This was one of many spiritual gifts that allow you to come into your fullness. Your fullness. And when you come into your fullness, then guess what? There's very little emptiness.
Very, very good. So you're saying the gift is one part of your fullness. It's not all the fullness, but...
No, not at all. But it's a good place to... It's a good simple way, the rote addition of simply acknowledging your place.
Right.
But you realize there are many humans who won't even acknowledge their place. So it's very difficult to get in line when you won't even acknowledge that you have a position.
What is their place? You mean their point of view or that they are something?
They just are.
They deny
it. That they're not some nebulous something that got squirted from the heavenlies, that this God out there somewhere is going to judge them based upon their actions, and then they get crossways with the Messiah syndrome, when if they could come into their place of knowing that power was greatly trusted within them, from them, you can trust yourself. See, trust becomes a great big issue of who's doing what and who's telling the truth and who's telling the lie and who's pandering for resources and on and on and on. And you spend so much time trying to negate or navigate. Now you can play with that another day.
Yeah.
But to navigate this process of being undupable, that they miss the goodness of all that is. If you spend all day every day thinking about the perils of cheesecake, you'll never enjoy the deliciousness that is indeed cheesecake. You'll eliminate that from your possibility. And if you engage it before you work that out, it'll probably give you cancer. And that'll be the new war on cancer, is cheesecake incarnate. The cheesecake is activating the cancer cells. So you'll have a piece of cheesecake and just go straight on and get you a dose of chemotherapy.
Okay.
It's amazing that the simplicity of how the process gets misconstrued into the position of being less than.
Okay, so if someone is vague and denies their place because they're reacting to the idea that there is something outside themselves, a creator who's watching them, so they actually say, well, I better not be too definite what I do because I'll get judged. So because they have a specter of judgment looking at them, they keep themselves vague so they don't look like they've made an action that could be judged. Is that accurate?
Correct. And any action they've taken, then they have to watch out to see how the judge is going to react to their statement, their present statement.
Yeah, now there's different extremes of people, humans' participation in that, but everybody has that dynamic in them to one degree to another, right?
Yes, they do.
And that's the labyrinth of your mind juggling with the physical and non-physical.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the fullness would be all three tuned in and exploding or vibrating or resonating all together. That's full fullness.
And the only place you'll find yourself there in that position is now. be in some nebulous future. It will not be in some deep, dark cave of your past. It will only be experienced now. They keep talking about that life is a journey, not a destination. Well, that sounds pretty glib when you start saying it that way. It's more of those platitudes that people get all tangled up with to fake it till you make it and only think good thoughts, and then if you think one bad thought, it's over. Well, see, that starts your whole judgment process. Well, I just can't think, Ion, I just can't think good thoughts all the time. That's okay. That's how you figure out what a good thought is. Because we're saying there are no bad thoughts. What's a bad thought? Oh, there's lots of bad thoughts. You can think evil things. Well, evil, you know how we feel about that. It's only the dynamic of how you choose. If you prefer vanilla ice cream over chocolate, that does not make chocolate evil.
Okay, so I just had a thought there. What were you just saying a minute ago? Okay, so I got the one before, but I had a newer one. Okay, so there.
Give him up, Carol, before you
use it
out all over
the place. Didn't type anything. Damn. Did you type anything?
Zion, what's this got to do with pate?
Yeah, no, wait a minute.
Need to worry about it.
I had a very subtle thing. So you were saying that people. What was that thing you were just saying? Let me think. Well, I'm going to go back to the previous one. The idea that people think they're on guard, that they're not duped. So that means that they're on guard, that something external is influencing them. They do not want to be influenced. So they're very careful that they're not being set up. So what is the real meaning of that? Does that connect back to just
fear? Fear from their past?
Yeah, but fear. Okay, they think, oh, I've experienced pain, and I'll probably get it again, and I better be on guard, because someone's going to move me in that direction of getting pain again, so I'm going to make sure that doesn't happen, or put it up.
And when you do that, guess what you do? You give that your undivided attention, so don't worry, it's on its way.
Right.
If the trucks are rolling.
Okay, so...
You may or may not have to sign for it at the door, but I promise you, in a very short window of time, it's merrily on its way.
Okay, so if you decide that you say fear is an aspect of not wanting to be duped, but is it also you don't want to take in an external influence? Because you actually say, I'm the universe, I create my own space. There's no way someone's going to fool me into thinking they're influencing my universe, because they can't, because I'm the center of my universe.
Correct.
That truism gets distorted into saying, I'm not going to be duped by something not in my universe, which is silly.
But see, if they come, well, it's not silly because it's where people are. So you got to give respect to it because it's where people are. Now, you understand it sounds a little silly, and it is, but we're trying to soften it so people go, non-physical call me silly. See, I told you I was less than. I knew I couldn't do it. I'd hoped for so much more. I had masturbations of marvelous, grandiose, illumined,
marvelosities. Marvelosity,
yes, Lord. And see, he said we were silly, and I just can't take it anymore. I just knew the shoe was going to drop. I just knew it was coming. I just didn't know when. And I'd hoped for so much more. But see, even that place resonates with the individual human creator, and they'll use these fabulous, beautiful, simple, easy, a two-year-old gets it without being told it, position that they are indeed impenetrable, mm-hmm. Cannot be penetrated. They are beyond, their feelings never could be hurt. Their feelings could never be hurt. Because whoever it is that's trying to hurt your feelings, you won't even notice or give them a minute of your attention.
Yeah, you're talking about young babies, young people.
No, we're talking about, well, the young babies get that naturally, but it's those old, dried-up, crotchety ones that seem to have the most fun with it. Well, if you live long enough, you'll be hurt. Okay, so it's only the good die young, okay?
So you're saying that if you get it when you're old,
you don't care what anybody thinks. Is that what you were saying?
If you can, that's great. Because if you're feeling, guess what? If you could do whatever you were going to do without any fear or degradation that it was going to hurt someone's feelings, then guess what? Your feelings would then become unhurtable. Somebody would be stepping on you, and you'd say, "Excuse me, you know, you're stepping all over me." And they'd say, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to encroach on your space." And we'd say, "No, you misunderstood. You didn't encroach on my space because you're not that powerful. I'm much more powerful as far as my space in my world. I was just letting you know before you got hurt."
Before they got hurt by you.
Yeah.
Before I smack you.
You don't even have to do that. It's like you're treading in my space. And if you're going to tread in my space, then you got to realize you're in my space. And if you, just so you know that you're in my space, it will be to your own peril.
Right. Well, okay. You're implying you smacked them. You said,
well, but it's
you,
not,
I'm just letting you know before you got hurt.
Yes.
It's just a play on the reverse of you and me getting hurt. But I'm saying, but it doesn't mean you're going to smack them.
Don't have to. Don't.
But it implies that, right? It's implied.
Yes.
That's how they take it. But they also hear the irony of the word because they thought they hurt you. No, I'm just warning you that you're on the road to getting hurt.
You're in my space, and I wanted to give you a good heads up before you got crossways of yourself.
Okay, now I remember that. What?
And it could go south.
Yeah. I remember what I was trying to remember 5 minutes ago. I thought you would laid out those platitudes. What were the think good thoughts, and there was two or three others. We need to put them on our website and say, because, you know, other mediums say, basic 10 points you learn from so-and-so, from the medium. And they list 10 platitudes. You know, you are immortal, you this. We ought to put three platitudes from Ion. Bad platitudes. Think good thoughts, and the other two that you mentioned.
Make it, do you make it?
Yes. Somehow post that and the other one on our site is the opposite. You know, we're saying we're not posting platitudes that you match with. We're pointing out ones we're not. We're not saying what we are, we're pointing out what we're not. What do you think of that?
Right. So it would be the 10-point guide of platitudes you do not have to engage in order to become enlightened.
Very good, very good. That's it. That's the sentence. So we might do
that. Okay, you'll start off. Fake it till you make it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Think good thoughts, was that one?
Yes. Only think good thoughts and all will be well.
Yeah. And then the third
master your possibilities.
Right, we don't like that one?
Master
your possibilities.
Because possibilities are those things you can't get to.
Okay.
Now, if you said master the impossibilities, we're all over that. We're on that. Well, you know what you don't. You know what you don't have. You want to know what you can have.
Right.
You know what you can't do. You want to know what you can do. You already know what you can't do. And that's caused you much issue.
Master your possibilities is working with what you know you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not, the issue is to work with what you can't do.
Yes.
Desire
is not the unquenchable desire to enlightenment.
Desire is not the unquenchable desire to enlightenment.
Correct. Let's see.
But see, where it's more the phrases. You're starting to get into more aphorisms, like make it, you know, things that people say, ordinary slang speech, fake it till you make it, think good thoughts, and then the rest of it, whatever it was. And then there was a third one, which you have said before, but we can't remember. But those kind of, it's like, you know, tossed off almost phatic expressions, phatic, their amiability statements.
Would this be one like Jesus saves, but St. Peter withdraws?
No, that's a joke. These aren't jokes. These are like
people. Well, we're just being cheeky so it could be fun.
Because
at the end of the day, if it's fun, then very good. Because end all. There is no end.
Well, you said that we didn't want to be duplicable because of an earlier fear. And the point is, kids are created in fear. I mean, eventually the fear thing goes into the kid. You can't get through childhood without some crazy fear things in your mind. Correct?
But yes, you can. Yes, you can. If you don't have somebody standing over you with a stick saying, don't do that, that'll kill you, don't do that, that'll kill you, don't do that.
They don't happen too often.
Well, but, you know, say like air.
No, that's the point. Most, 99% of humanity has someone standing over them as a kid, when they're a kid, and they get these things put in them, and therefore you do think life is serious. See that? So what would you tell parents? You know, the parents are going to resist the idea that they're not going to let their kid just walk
away. Well, then we say, good, that's contrast, and sit them down at an early age and teach them when to activate the jihadist in them.
I missed that. You said, what did you say about contrast?
It'll set up the contrast. That's fine. Go right ahead. And we'll rock along a few millennia from now. We'll say, how's that working for you? And then we'd say, Mama, you're right. Sit that child down early on and teach them how to make the early, young, fresh jihadist come out in them. And a mother would say, oh, I would never do that. No, 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 that's beyond it. So then you go, okay. But every other dynamic that you cram down their throat to conform them, to mold them into this capacity that they are gonna be, by God, you will do what I say. Well, and they say, well, yes, I'm God, and we'll see how it comes out. Because they're not going to have it. That's that's where your flower children came from. That's where your rock and roll music came from. That's where all your what you call aberrations, where the youngsters would sow their wild oats. If they're not wild, they've never been sown before. You're trying to get them to germinate in a jar, and they're not going to do that. So that's your revolutions that come along, and the folks get pushed and pushed and pushed till they go, you know what? You've pushed me just about the last time you're going to push me. Now, I don't know how this is going to come out, but me or you one is fixing to get a whipping. I don't know which one, but one of us is bring it on. We're fixing to tie up. Well, when you come into that place where you take your power, guess what happens? The same way when you have a bully on the playground, you punch that bully in the belly or in the nose one time, and guess what? You've made a friend for life, and he's no longer a bully.
Right, but what the parents, though, they still lord it over the kids, but they don't say think they're making a jihadist, but they do the middle of the way.
And they are.
They are by their
conform,
by their
conform
mediocre.
Or die. Conform or die.
So you
conform
could,
or die.
In other words, there's not high conformity demands, lukewarm conformity demands, and low conformity demands. Any one of those is still conformity.
Yep, that's correct.
Yeah,
that's correct. And here's how you do it. If you're asking, are you asking? Is that what you're trying to get to, or are you just?
I'm asking about advice for parents, because
get off your kids.
But how do you do that? But let me just say this. Ayanna said before, if you see your kid crawling towards a cliff, do not stop them. Now that's a statement by Ayanna. All right, but wait a minute. Try to explain that, because you know the average scared human is not going to allow their child to walk towards a cliff. So let's see you prove or somehow explain why they can do that.
Because you have the news all day, every day, if this young child fell off the cliff.
Yeah, you have
if
to.
If they're watching over their every movement, their every step, and their every gauging point, how could any calamity ever befall a child?
But they do.
But they're watching. See, they should have been watching them closer. No. See, it's all crossways. That fear particulate is what sets that all into motion. If you tell your daughter you're not going to date that boy, that's coming. His hair's long. He doesn't come from a good family. You can do better than that. You're not going to see him. I forbid you to see him again. Well, you might as well go ahead and start ordering the flowers because the wedding is on.
Okay, and we understand. I'm talking about the early period. How can a parent accept that, and you're saying, well, and there occasionally are kids who get die, go off the cliff, and why'd that happen? The parent was negligent. But isn't that very much?
It's not negligence. It is not negligence.
What is it?
It is that the child with the fastest path to good joy was to transition.
So did primitive societies have this attitude? What we call primitive societies, you know.
They certainly did, and so much so that the shaman of the tribe, if a baby came out and wasn't just perfect, he'd just chuck him over the cliff himself.
So,
well, you laugh, but that's what they did, and they are the forerunners of your genotypes that make your RNA click within your DNA strands, and now run from that one a little bit in your past ramifications.
Wait a minute, you said they're the kids who get thrown over are the frogs?
No,
is the forerunner? What, the shaman?
No, the ones left setting your DNA.
Okay, wait a minute. You said that they were the forerunners. We were talking about a shaman throwing a damaged baby over the cliff. So
yes.
What is the word forerunner referring to? The baby thrown over the cliff?
The ones left having babies that survive to make generations that let you come into your place that let you have opposing thumbs.
All right, so you're saying the ones that didn't get thrown over, we should be thankful because they were strong and made us stronger, or some kind of resilience, or is that what you're saying?
That they survived.
Yeah, they survived. So you're saying...
See, back in those days, the tribe, it wasn't about that. You lived until you were no more, okay? And there wasn't any degradation of that process. There wasn't this fear base of you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to make good grades, you can't be a dumb cluck, you gotta do so well.
They didn't even say death or transition was a problem. They didn't know any better, so to speak. They were correct in their attitude.
They didn't know any better, that's right, Aaron. They didn't know any worse, I guess that's the way to say it. They didn't know any worse. Now, you know worse than that, and like your mother would say, you know better than that. No. She'd say, well, you know worse than that. Yes, Mom, I do. I know lots worse than that. Okay, then play with those things, and then you can appreciate where you are. And then where you are becomes okay. And I want you to know, here's how this is going to work. I'm a lover who loves, so therefore I'm going to love. Now, in my house, there are parameters that will be respected, meaning, my world, I run my way. And you're welcome to join and take part of the few fruit of my loin, seed of my sin that brought you forth. You're welcome to participate. I'll even feed you. I'll get Pop-Tarts just because Pop-Tarts are fine. But you're the marvelous creator, and if you want something in your experience, you can create it. You don't need me to validate your power. Little babies that are born, they don't say, they're going to cry. They cry till they get what they want. They're wet, they cry till they get what they want. And you, they don't even tell you. You're the marvelous creator. You got to figure it out if they're hungry or colicky or wet or hot or cold or mad or sleepy or ill or blah, 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 blah. They demand it. Okay? Mm-hmm. Well, then they don't care. They don't ask forgiveness. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm crying because I'm wet. You won't change me. I'm sorry I messed up your time. I'm sorry I intervened in your space. They go to hell with that noise. Hey, I'm hungry. I'm eating and I want to eat now. Carolyn, what is laid out on the counter for me? I'm hungry. I want to eat now. Carolyn, do we have anything later? Yes, Bob, we have. Okay. Am I supposed to eat that? Yes, Bob, okay. Well, see, that becomes fun because they do that. Then they come in and they get to, you have to train them. And then they go in there and they look at the porcelain garden and they look at where the potty is and they look at their mom and they're like, you want me to do what? Where? How? You know, excuse me. You've got to be kidding. In this pit that rolls down and things disappear and never come back. You expect me to participate in this process. Well, the moral to the story of this is if you could just back off your kids a little bit, they're going to do just fine. They're going to do it despite
Okay, now, are you, but on the toilet issue, are you saying they should not be toilet trained?
Well, trained, no.
How do they get to use the toilet?
They'll figure it out.
So you let them, you know, do their, eliminate themselves all over the house until they figure it out?
Well, now that's your house.
Yeah.
So it might be better, like your litter box. Just put them in the porcelain gardens and then let them do it there. You see?
Well, that's what I thought you were saying. Why do you want me to do that? That they objected to the porcelain garden.
They do, but see, the process of how it's done, mm-hmm. is way easier when you don't push against it. When all you do is let them know how much better it is, and then you're not messed up, and you don't have to mess up your clothes, and it works out so much better, and how clean and refreshed you are when you use the facilities when you gotta go, and you don't wet all over yourself and get all chafed, and it's just so much better if you would engage or embrace this particular thing. The same way with getting them to eat mashed potatoes.
Okay, hold it. So
your thing.
Yeah, I'm not getting, like you're saying they come and they overreact to the porcelain garden. Why, you want me to do that? But you're saying you do tell them to do it, but I think you were...
You help them with that as an opportunity, not as a command.
Oh, okay, not so commanding.
Yeah. Dad, can I ride my bicycle off the porch? Well, sure, son. Dad, I can't ride my bicycle off the porch. And we go, son, we couldn't stop you. You'd do it when we weren't looking. You'd do it when we were home. We said, and if we said, whatever you do, do not ride your bicycle off those steps. It may have never dawned on them before until you said that. And you go like, that mean old daddy is trying to keep me from my bliss and my joy. And all the answers of the universe would be if I could just ride my bicycle off the stairs. And we go, knock yourself out. Go right ahead. And when they know, this can't just be words. You can't just give them this can't be a blowjob. It's got to be real. You've got to mean it. Mm-hmm. And the way that they're raised, you can't just pop off with it. You've got to be sincere and genuine with the process.
And say, you go ahead and do it and mean it.
Go right ahead. And leave it just like that. Or if it's something that you just can't do it immediately and you want to put ease into it, you might say, well, that sounds very interesting, Johnny. Why do you think you want to ride your bicycle off the steps? Well, I don't know. It'd just be cool. And we go, okay, very good. Let's proceed. we understand. And then they decide. Because they're going to decide anyway. That's what we're here to tell you. All day, every day. They're going to decide anyway. And everything that you push against to such a degree that make it taboo, that adds an allure to the whole process. The allure is they will figure it out for themselves. They have their own non-physical. You don't have more non-physical than they have. Matter of fact, them coming fresher from source makes them actually, they should be telling you what to do.
Oh.
It would be much easier because you're the ones that have created all this contrast and sidewindedness to the point that you've confused your own self with yourself. The distance between them and them is much closer, mostly, than the distance between you and you.
Oh, okay.
Basically, the more you find to fuss and worry about, the more there'll be to fuss and worry about. Then there's more there is to fuss and worry about, the more you'll have to fuss. Then you'll have to fuss and worrying about fussing and worrying to the point where you just get tired and say, I've had enough. If this is the best like this, I think I'll just go on to my heavenly reward.